Right, I'm impressed. That was a very short announcement. Well done, Cheryl. All right. Nice to be here again. And as always, I invite your questions, your concerns, whatever you want to explore or ask. I'm open to that. You can either just type in a question or raise your hand if you're here in the chat room. And if you're not here, or if you're listening to this as a recording, then you can email me at nirmala@endless-satsang.com. And I will, include your questions in our next gathering. And so I will, just in case people need some time to type or consider their own questions, I'll start with another question that came in this week. And to really explain the question, I need to just real briefly describe two pieces of my teachings that she refers to. The first one has to do with love is forgiving. And the idea there is that we are filled with love when we give it. And that you can experience as much love as you wish just by giving it freely. And it helps in doing that to simplify our concept of love, to bring it down to its most basic qualities, which are the most basic qualities of love are actually just awareness or attention and space or acceptance, allowing. And so if you give those freely, then your experience of them expands. So if you pour awareness onto whatever's present, whatever is showing up in this moment, an object, a thought, a feeling, another person, it's usually actually best to start with some fairly neutral things or things that you find or things that you find it easy to shower with attention. That's even better because you can get the feel of it. So if there's something you find especially beautiful or especially lovable, then you can just shower it with attention and acceptance or space. More simply, space is in a sense a more simple version of acceptance. It's just a recognition that there is lots of space here for all the objects, all the mountains and oceans and planets and stars and galaxies, and of course plenty of space for all your thoughts and feelings. They don't actually take up that much space. And so you can either give space to whatever is present or simply notice the space around it. And so when you shower something with this quality of attention, this quality of spacious awareness, accepting, allowing attention, then there's just a natural flow of those qualities, a natural flow of this essence of love. So that's one of the things she mentions in her question, so I just wanted to introduce that. And then the other thing which comes a little later in the question is something I've spoken a lot about on here, which is the capacity of our own being, our own awareness, to accurately discriminate how true things are. And very simply, the truth is whatever opens your heart and quiets your mind. So anything that has those qualities, anything that gives you a sense of that opening, expansion, softening, and also tends to make your mind fall quiet or quieter, it's a movement into greater truth. And anything that has the opposite quality, anything that causes a contraction in your heart, a contraction in your sense of self, very simply, it's just a movement into a smaller truth. So now moving to the question that I got this week, woman wrote that this past week I finished Meeting the Mystery and started That. Those are both books that you can find on my website. At the end of meeting the mystery, there was a summary review of the love is forgiving idea. Again, showering things with attention and acceptance. And I was playing with that idea in the present moment as described, but also related to the memory of my cat. This is where it gets interesting. He died about a year ago, and I had been ridiculously attached to him. I don't know about that. I think there's no such thing as being too much in love with a pet. They are one of those things that it's pretty easy to shower with love. It just comes naturally. So again, you can get the sense of what it's like to give limitless love, limitless attention, limitless acceptance. With a pet, they're often very, very easy. I guess it depends a little bit on the pet, but most pets are a really easy thing to love. He was always my easiest source for generating feelings of love. Yeah, that's what I suggested. When I think of him spontaneously now, it opens my heart. So here she's kind of combining the two. When she thinks of her cat, who is no longer alive, it still opens her heart. There's this flow of love. Turns out that love is a very profound truth. It's a very profound, expansive experience. It's a very big truth. It's actually our deepest, truest nature. And so when she thinks of her cat, the flow of love starts happening, and her heart starts opening, just as I described, when you experience a large truth. And then she goes on and says, however, when playing with the exercises of focusing on giving love in relation to his memory, I have a variable response. Sometimes open, sometimes more neutral. Although not actively grieving, I may still miss him a bit, which could be one explanation for a variable response. Then in That Is That, the second book, I was just reading a section about how short-lived our thoughts are and how focusing on them can naturally lead to contraction. I know in general dwelling in the past or on thoughts and fantasies tends to limit the self. However, there is a line from A Course in Miracles, every loving thought that the Son of God ever had is eternal. I'll say that again, it's from The Course in Miracles. Every loving thought that the Son of God, meaning man, ever had is eternal. And so then she asked, do you find that remembering or extending to love to something from the past tends to be contracting? Alternatively, are there thoughts that due to their loving nature can be more expansive and heart-opening? So to answer those questions, the first thing I would want to stress, because it's something that when you start getting into the, even when you just first start getting into the spiritual journey, the spiritual seeking process, there's this really strong underlying assumption that there's some experience, some truth out there that is better than the truth right here, right now. And as a counterbalance to that tendency to think there's something better, or even that bigger, even that a bigger truth is better, I'd like to stress that all there is truth. The truth is what is. The truth, anything that exists, anything that happens, anything you can experience, is a part of the truth. And the test, the proof that it's part of the truth is that you just experienced it, that it's happening, that it exists. That is the definition of truth. It's what is. And so both of these questions, again, have a little bit, just a little bit. It's, you know, it's natural, it's normal when you start having bigger experiences of the truth and more expansive openings of your heart and of your consciousness, and even all the way up to a full-blown awakening, that at first they seem better. It seems like, oh, that's the size truth that I want to experience. And, you know, the truth comes in all sizes. what is. There's little things, little parts of existence, and there's very large aspects of existence. And so, the fullest expression of this invitation to be curious about how true things are, to be paying attention to your own heart, is to notice both the expansions and the contractions, and to really trust whichever one is happening. I know I've spoken about this before, even in response to questions from the same person, but I think all of us need those kinds of reminders because of this tendency to frame things as, even the bigger is better idea. We're all very susceptible to that, even when it comes to spirituality, even when it comes to something so profound and fundamental as existence, as truth. We think that the more the merrier. And now here's I'm going to introduce something that's actually a very large truth that maybe can counterbalance this tendency to want to have more heart-opening experiences, to experience bigger truths, to feel more expansion in your life, which, like I said, is a natural inclination. The only thing is that effort to open or expand your own heart actually contracts you. It's a little bit paradoxical that trying to be expanded is not actually a very big truth. It's not wrong or bad. Again, all there is truth. Everyone who's ever had a big heart-opening experience has tried to recapture it or hang on to it. But that effort to recapture it or to hang on to it is a smaller truth, at least relatively. So it's relative. So it always depends where you're coming from. So if you've just had a big heart, a true, spontaneous, heart-opening, spiritual experience, and then you try to hang on to it, the effort to hang on to it is actually a smaller truth. And so there's, even though there's this really strong tendency to do it, it also appropriately contracts us to try to hang on to an expansion, hang on to any experience, really. Or get rid of any experience if we try to get rid of the contractions. So I said I was going to introduce a really big truth that counterbalances any tendency we might have to try to to hang on or avoid contracted experiences, hang on to expanded experiences and avoid contracted experiences. And that really big truth is that it's not up to you how big a truth you experience. It's not up to you whether your heart is opening in this moment or closing in this moment. You don't do that. You don't decide what's the next thought that comes into your mind, what's the next experience that you will have. Life decides that. Life is unfolding it perfectly. And when a small truth needs to be experienced, a small truth is experienced. And when a large truth needs to be experienced, a large truth is experienced. And so, if you really take that in for a moment, if you really understand that it's not up to you, it's not something you do, this expansion or contraction is a natural, normal, both expansion and contraction are normal. And they are normal responses to what is just showing up, what is just happening of its own accord. And so, then that truth can put this process of listening to your heart into a whole nother perspective. and that is to recognize that your job really is just to notice. Just notice. Oh, my heart's contracted. Oh, my heart's expanded. And if you love, back to the idea of giving love, if you love the experience just as it is, if you accept it, if you really notice it, then even noticing that you're contracted, accepting that you're contracted especially, expands you. Because it's in alignment with this bigger truth that it's not up to you and that everything is just showing up as needed. Everything is happening just as it is meant to happen. So when you accept the fact that you're feeling contracted, it tends to soften. It tends to open. When you resist any contraction, or if you resist an expansion, any resistance will tend to contract you because it's just not as much in alignment with that bigger truth that it's not up to you. Now, if you ponder this whole truth that it's not up to you what you experience, if you ponder it, you may come up against a deeper kind of level of paradox, which is that even what I just described, which is the giving love to your experience just as it is, the accepting the contraction or the expansion. Sometimes it's even more challenging for people to truly accept or allow, especially a really big expansion, because it can feel unfamiliar, feel maybe too strong, too intense. But this invitation I just offered to give love, give attention, give space, acceptance to either whatever contraction or expansion is happening. But again, if you're paying attention, you realize, well, that's not up to me either. I don't ultimately do that part either. So that also just seems to spontaneously arise. And sometimes in very surprising ways. You can have your heart broken, like, for instance, by the loss of a cat, or even just by the memory of your most beloved cat. And there will be a response. And then there will be either acceptance or resistance. And all of that is actually just unfolding. So these, and by the way, this is revealing a big secret about spiritual practices and spiritual processes that doesn't actually get talked about a lot, which is this really deep paradox that, there's all these things that you can do supposedly to experience more of your true nature, and yet you can't do them. They do happen. They are done by your own true nature. So there are moments of acceptance. There are moments of resistance. But you don't actually do either one. And so so again, this is a big secret. It's like, well, then why are there all these spiritual instructions? Why are there so many things we're supposed to do for our spiritual unfolding? And this is where it gets very paradoxical, because even though we can't actually do the acceptance or do the resistance, this place of attention, this place of awareness, is kind of in between doing and not doing. Just noticing something is about as little doing as you can do, and yet it's also really a not doing, because awareness is what you are. I challenge you to turn it off, just take a moment right now and stop being aware of anything at all. Not a thought, not a sensation, not the sound of my voice, because I'm not going to stop talking, so good luck with that. You have to like tune out my voice also. It's like, no, awareness, there's no off switch. It's just stuck on. And so these practices, these awareness practices that are, you know, that all spiritual traditions are full of, they're all a trick. They're all like a magician's trick. You know, a magician comes out on the stage and he pulls a rabbit out of a hat. Well, guess what? The rabbit was always there. There was a secret little compartment at the bottom of the top hat when it's turned upside down. And that's, the rabbit was there when he came out on stage. It's always been there. And so these tricks, these spiritual practices, where you practice giving love, or you practice paying attention, or you practice mindfulness, they're all a trick, because the thing that you're practicing is already happening. Especially if you include, in my little practice of listening to your heart, if you include and really trust both the expansions and contractions that happen naturally, spontaneously, just in response to every thought and feeling and encounter and experience that appears. If you include both the expansions and contractions, you discover that that's always happening. It's just inherent in this thing, awareness, that's always present, that it discriminates. It distinguishes between big truths and little truths. And so with every breath, in every moment, your heart, your discrimination is either opening or contracting. It's not actually something you do. And noticing it is also as natural as breathing. It's also, again, just another function of awareness. So when you notice it, that's a totally spontaneous act. So then why do any spiritual practices? Well, this is where it gets paradoxical. It seems like doing what you are, doing what is already natural, what is already occurring, increases the chances that you will have, in a sense, a fuller awareness of what is already happening. It's something like paddling down the river. It's that you recognize in what direction you're going. And so you recognize by paying attention to the expansions and contractions, it's hard to say that you increase the awareness, because again, you don't do that part, but awareness increases. There's a subtle interaction between our actions and in the practices that evokes more of what is you're already present, already true. It turns out, you know, the good news is, like these questions, you find that remembering or extending love to something from the past tends to be contracting. Well, the only way you can really find out is to do it, is to, you know, give love to your cat who's no longer present. Notice in this moment, is that an expansion or a contraction? But the really good news is that it doesn't matter. If it's an expansion, then it's an expansion. If it's a contraction, it's a contraction. And the real reason it doesn't matter is that neither expansion nor contraction in any way harm this awareness or harm its capacity to recognize when something is a smaller truth and to recognize something is a larger truth. no matter how many times you've gotten very, very contracted, you never lost the capacity to expand. And what's a little surprising to a lot of spiritual seekers who start to have very expanded experiences is that no matter how many times you get very, very expanded, you don't lose the capacity to contract. They are both natural, healthy functions of this awareness that's always present. So the real trick, the meta trick of doing all these spiritual practices is when you kind of get it that they aren't needed. It's like you suddenly realize, oh wait, I'm doing what is already the case. It's sort of like doing having shoulders. No matter what you do, you still have shoulders. Or if you forget to do your practice of doing having shoulders, and then you said, oh, I forgot to do my shoulder practice today. And then you check. And guess what? You still have shoulders. They are a given. They are present. And so awareness is like that. So this is both, it's funny, this is both an invitation to dive more deeply into whatever practices you have. Because if they really don't matter, if they really aren't necessary in a sense, then you're free to just do them for their own sake. To shower things with love, just for the sake of showering things with love. To be more mindful, just for the experience of being more mindful. And to whatever degree by the definition of the practice, to whatever degree you succeed, that's wonderful. And to whatever degree you find that you don't like stay with the practice, your mind wanders, and then you go, oh my God, I was sitting here meditating, and for the last 20 minutes I've been planning my next vacation. Find out. Either way, you find out something about your awareness. That in the latter case, you find out that getting all contracted and lost in thought doesn't actually harm your awareness. Awareness itself cannot be harmed. And so, this is that paradox. Well, the second question again is, alternatively, are there thoughts that due to their loving nature can be more expansive, heart-opening? Yeah, there are thoughts. Thoughts by themselves are often a fairly limited experience of truth. But if they trigger an actual flow of love or an actual sensing of awareness itself or spaciousness, if that's what the thought is pointing to, and you drop into an experience of that quality itself, then yes, they can have that effect. Though again, the purpose of all these practices and mindfulness and paying attention to your thoughts is to bring you to this recognition that it all is just perfectly fine the way it is, and that it doesn't matter what thought is present or not present. It doesn't matter how expanded or contracted you are. And that even if you're not showering something with love in this very moment, you never lose that capacity. And in fact, there still is a flow of love. All that really happens, since love is, again, the essence of love is awareness, and you can't turn off awareness, then you can't really turn off love. All that really happens is that it gets narrow and contracted. My favorite metaphor for that is when we are loving our taste buds. When we love our taste buds, there's still this amazing flow of love to our taste buds, and we're usually putting something on them that is being very, very kind to our taste buds. So it's still love. It's just very narrow. And if that's the only thing you're in a sense giving awareness to, is the experience of your taste buds, then you know you may suddenly find yourself staring into the bottom of a pint of Ben and Jerry's and wondering why your stomach hurts because you were so lost in your love of the super fudge chunk or something, super New York fudge chunk. She loves that flavor. And so do I. Whenever it's on my taste buds, they are very, very happy. And so it's a wonderful thing to be loving to your taste buds. But if you're only loving to your taste buds, if that love gets very near, then you can end up with a stomachache. Or worse, you know, if it goes on for years, you can end up with diabetes or, you know, with that. Weight problems or things like that. But it's still love. All there is love. All there is truth. So this question, you know, are there thoughts that can be more expansive or heart-opening? Yes. And the value of those thoughts is when they bring you to this place where it no longer matters. When you've had enough experiences of expansion and heart opening, which is always, you know, followed at least relatively by some kind of contraction, some kind of re-identification, some kind of movement back into a different state. But when you've had enough of those experiences that it's on a very, very deep level, you relax. You are just here. I mean, it's called the natural state. Our awakened nature is called the natural state. And so when you stop trying to manage it, guess what's left? What's left is your natural state. What's left is this movement of expansion and contraction, of awareness flowing in big ways and then flowing in very narrow ways. Just as life unfolds. There's not no sense of one experience being better or one experience being worse. And again, though, paradoxically, the way you get there is by playing with your awareness, by doing spiritual practices that give you lots of experiences of expansion. And if you're honest, you know, if you're really truly just tracking it openly with curiosity, you'll discover that spiritual practices almost just as often give you an experience of contraction. It's just the nature of our awareness that it does this thing called contract. And again, you don't do it. It naturally does it, just like even when you're asleep, your lungs, your diaphragm expands and contracts. Everything really in the universe is always has this kind of rhythmic expansion and contraction. Even the whole universe itself, there's, you know, goes through these cycles of expansion and contraction. Because another fundamental quality of this awareness, this beingness, this true nature, is that it's alive. It's dynamic. Everything in existence is in constant movement, constant change. And so one form of that constant change is the expansion and contraction of your own awareness. Surprise that, you know, after all those years of spiritual seeking and effort to find out that the whole point was so that you could really, truly, deeply discover that it didn't matter. None of it mattered. That you were already that. You were already free. You were already awake. right, when you started. And yet, you know, there's no mistake either. There's nothing wrong with that either. That's that process, that journey, that, you know, the questions that come just naturally about what effect this thought will have or that thought will have. And should I focus on the past or should I focus on the present? And, you know, try it every which way until you discover that it doesn't matter. It's just another aspect of what is, where your focus is. And at that point, you may or may not continue to practice. Probably depends on what you enjoy it. You know, someone who's gotten really, really good at playing the piano may continue to practice playing the piano in order to get better and in order to maintain that level of skill so that they can also really, really enjoy the times when they're just playing the piano, not practicing it. Again, that paradox, that really deep truth that kind of throws a monkey wrench in all of our efforts at spiritual awakening, which is that we don't do any of it, that's still true even after you've discovered that it doesn't matter. it's still not up to you if you're still a meditating fool and spend hours a day doing inquiry and love going to kirtan and doing devotional practices, or whether you just can't for the life of yourself make yourself do a single spiritual thing, even if you were even if your life depended on it. You know, there's wonderful stories. Nisargadatta, he was one of these. He was a very radical proponent of this fundamental truth of that it's not up to you, and yet he still did. He still did his puja's every day. So go figure. You know. If it truly isn't up to you, it also isn't up to. Also, wasn't up to Nisargadatta. So he continues with his practices. Now, the last point I would like to make about all this is to kind of present it in a slightly different light. I know that a lot of people in this group came to this process or encountered somewhere along the way the Course in Miracles, and I'm not actually much of an authority on that particular piece of writing. Someone asked if I know Roger Castillo. I don't. But back to the Course in Miracles, I find that word miracles. Miracles. It's like what an intriguing word. And one way we think of miracles is as something extraordinary, and especially, you know, something that we think would be extremely positive, like, you know, it would be a miracle if I won the lottery, or be a miracle if I was able to, you know, cure my acne or my dandruff or my, you know, more serious illness. And that is miraculous. I mean, in one perspective, everything is miraculous. But those kind of things are also kind of on the, they're on the, oh, Sharon. Somebody's saying Sharon has a question. Is she raising her hand? She can. If Sharon, if you have a question, just raise your hand again. I get going, and the hour goes by. You know, if I want to answer your questions, you're probably best off emailing me ahead of time, because once I get talking, there's no telling when I'll stop, when I'll pause, or even take a breath. Oh, yeah, I did answer a question. I don't know Roger, so I'm happy to be introduced to him. You could, again, you could email it's not that relevant to the group. So anyways, back to miracles. So again, we often think of miracles in these kind of in terms of these kind of dualistic experiences, and of course, because they're dualistic, it's a very limited kind of miracle. It usually has a flip side. And for instance, it's one of my favorite little factoids, you could call it, my favorite little points, is that most people aren't aware of, is that lottery winners declare bankruptcy and commit suicide at much higher rates than the normal population. It seems like this thing that would be such a blessing, such a miracle, actually has all these strings attached. It has this incredibly intense duality involved with it. In fact, I have a friend who's quite a scholar of Vedic knowledge, and he says that it's actually inherent in the karma of the money itself, and that even if you give away all the money that you win in the lottery, there's still a karmic debt that is incurred. And at the very least, you know, it creates all kinds of new problems of what to do with the money. And not only do lottery winners declare bankruptcy and commit suicide at higher rates than normal, they also get kidnapped at higher rates than normal. Because people know, you know, it's right there in the newspapers. So-and-so won $500 million, and so you know, their next door neighbor says, I'd like some of that. So they kidnap them. And this, you know, the same thing to a degree with any kind of, again, dualistic miracle, dualistic, you know, huge fulfillment of a dualistic desire. It always has a flip side. It always has another dimension to it. But these qualities that we've been talking about today, Regina wrote, best to announce in the article about your winning that you've already given 100% to charity. Yes, it's all gone. Leave me alone. But again, it gets really tricky. My friend who studied the Vedas, you know, he says that the karma is in the money. So if you give it all away, you'll actually the charities that you give it to will incur some bad karma. And I tell you, it's really tricky trying to navigate this world of duality. But fortunately, there are miracles that don't have this flip side to them. They're non-dual. They're just essential. They are fundamental. And that's what we've been talking about today. You can think of awareness itself as a miracle. I mean, what is it really? And where did it come from? And why is it here? And why does it never shut off? It is truly miraculous in its function, including in its ability to discriminate, to inherently expand and contract based on what we're experiencing and how true it is. That's miraculous in and of itself. Possibly even more fundamental, a more fundamental miracle is existence itself. Why is there anything? Why is there awareness? Why is there space? Why is there the color blue? Why are there trees? Why are there, you know, stars and galaxies and solar systems and planets and animals and insects and fish? Why does anything at all exist? Yeah, all of those things are miracles. They're miracles in this non-dual sense. They're miracles just because they exist. And they are inherently valuable, inherently worthwhile, inherently alive, Everything is in motion. Everything is alive in this entire universe. So, you know, instead of having to get into the roller coaster ride of these dualistic miracles, which always have their downside, their upside and their downside. This reminds me of the old stories about the person who finds the genie in a bottle, and they're given three wishes, and they end up having to use the third wish to clean up the mess they made with their first two wishes. It's like that's the nature of that level of reality. But there is this other level. This level, like again, why? What is space? And why is there? Why? Not only why do things exist, or what a miracle that they exist, but what a miracle that there's all this room to put them in. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this universe, and yet so far we haven't run out of space. We haven't, you know, there are new galaxies forming, and you know, supernovas happening, and all kinds of radiation and energy and light and all kinds of stuff traveling through that space, and there's plenty of space for all of it. And just as I said on a more relative level, that you can't harm awareness. There's plenty of awareness. No matter how contracted or expanded it is in a particular moment, the awareness itself, the source of awareness, is limitless. What a miracle. So this is maybe a more, it's just a simpler place to go for miracles. You know, you can either go to the miracle store where there's all kinds of strings and you have to sign all these contracts and it's all kinds of problems and, you know, there's all kinds of dualistic challenges involved in seeking those kinds of miracles, choosing those kinds of miracles as your goal. Or you can go to this other miracle store where the miracles are all free and they are abundant and they are maintenance free, and they never cause any problem in and of themselves. In fact, they are a place that when you truly experience the miracle of awareness, you have no problems. When you truly experience the nature of space, how could there be a problem for space? You know, you can set off a supernova or a bomb in space, and it doesn't harm the space. What a miracle. Something that no matter how big a bomb you set off, it cannot be harmed. Love cannot be harmed. So the invitation is to check out the non-dual miracle store where these amazing qualities are ever present, miraculous, beyond belief, really. And we tend to just overlook them because they are so ever present. We get very wrapped up in the more relative and dualistic aspects of our lives because they aren't. It's funny that we would pretty chase after them when they're so unreliable, when they're so dualistic and tend to pull all these tricks on us, where we think something that we think will be good for us actually also has and again on the relative level a challenge to it or a difficulty associated with it. And at some point, you know, we just develop it. I think of it almost as like developing a taste. You know, there are some things that it seems like we're just hardwired to find tasty. You know, and so some of that's genetic, just like something that's very sweet is tends to have a lot of calories in it, which from a pure survival mechanism, survival perspective, that's a really good thing. A lot of finding a food source that has a lot of calories in it is good. And so almost everybody finds, something sweet. You might have your little preferences. You might like fruit more than you like ice cream, who knows. But sweetness is a kind of universal thing that we enjoy. But then there are also these acquired tastes. Certain kinds of cheeses and caviar and, exotic dishes or super hot spicy cuisine or strange fermented, yak milk drinks. The first time you drink it, you're like, not so sure that's even really food. It's like, hello. Yeah. Regina says her taste buds strongly dislike caviar. Someone else puts kimchi. And this is where it gets interesting. You can acquire a taste or develop a taste for these foods. I don't know if it's worth it to you, but especially when it comes to food, but you can persist with eating caviar. I did at one point in my life because I also thought it was kind of weird the first time I ate it, but somehow, I made it. It was just this little ritual with my first wife that we would occasionally buy caviar and eat it. And after a while, I was like, oh, goody, caviar. I was shocked that I could develop a taste for something that at first tasted so bad. And so I think, strange as it may sound, these more fundamental aspects of our being. I'm just gonna admit, she only tried it once. Yeah, that's not a fair test. But these more fundamental qualities of awareness and so forth, they don't seem to have a lot of calories, or they don't seem to have a lot of, like, what's so special about awareness? It's always here. Why would I pay attention to that? And yet, I'm really stretching the metaphor here, but like some of these foods, like caviar, as you get more familiar with it, as you give it more attention, you can discover this kind of endless richness to it. Deeper layers of flavor, if you want to call it that, deeper qualities of these things that are so ordinary, and yet again with time, with more experiences of it, you can start to be more of a connoisseur of awareness, a connoisseur of space. Of this subtle discriminating expansion and contraction. It's just an aspect of the inherent capacity our awareness has to discriminate, both physically how big things are and also on the more subtle level of truth or reality or significance, relevance, how important something is. Our awareness discriminates that by either expanding or contracting. And it's a very subtle thing. It may not be something you immediately sort of even notice or are curious about. And yet when it gets pointed out, you can become a connoisseur of the opening and closing of your own heart. You can develop a very fine-tuned sense of the allottedness of even inanimate objects. As you sense them more subtly, in the same way you might leave that caviar on your tongue for a little bit longer, when you stay with anything, emptiness, awareness, aliveness, the simplest object. I was in a group the other day, and someone was talking about how they decided to really test out this idea that you could have a rich experience with any object, and so they chose their dog's poop. Which and they started again showering it with attention, really, really looking at it for once. And they discovered it had all these amazing textures and colors, and there were flies on it, and the flies' wings were just miraculous beyond words. But this is looking beyond the surface, beyond the, you know, our preferences and our dislikes, to the essence of things. And it includes, surprisingly, it includes dog poop and caviar. And all of the rich inner experiences that we talk about here in Satsang. So I hope you all have a wonderful week and enjoy your quite the combo, dog poop and caviar. Yeah, I don't recommend them both on a cracker. So I hope you all have a wonderful week exploring the miracles of existence. And I will look forward to being with you again. And sure, give me a minute, I will type in the title for this week. I hope you all are well, and talk to you again next week. Bye for now.